designated hour having arrived, I called order this special meeting of Ansel Glink's Quorum Forum podcast, the podcast local governments need to do business. In the chair, it's me, Daniel J. Bolin. On the agenda today, it's bells that can't be unrung after COVID-19. I'm driving back from my first in-person local government meeting since the stay-at-home order in March. I heard some folks saying, "Oh, we're going back to normal." And I says to them, "No, we're going back to better than normal." Because that's a message I heard at last month's Forward Together virtual conference hosted by Polco NRC. They had folks there from local government groups all over the country. We got ICMA, National League of Cities, Alliance for Innovation, GFOA, engaging local government leaders. And who was there representing ELGL? Well, it was my close personal friend, Dan Bolin. And Dan was there talking about bells that can't be unrung after COVID-19, local government meetings, work from home, liquor control, right-of-way management, utility billing, all things that are going to come back better after COVID-19. So we're going to play Dan's talk for you here today on Ansel Glink's Quorum Forum podcast. You'll hear Dan saying lots of very smart things, but you also hear him talking to his friend Brian about advancing slides since this was an audio-visual virtual conference. And we'll have links to those slides and recordings of all the great conference sessions in the show notes for you here today. The conference was in May, and more than a few things changed since then. You'll hear Dan mention Illinois will need legislation to continue meetings without a physical quorum during a public health disaster. Well, the governor just signed a bill that does that, Senate Bill 2135. Dan also mentions cocktails to go is a future possibility. Well, the governor just signed that bill. It's effective for 1 year with local approval. You can have cocktails to go. What hasn't changed is that emergency practices are changing future expectations for local governments. And so, without further ado, we're going to bring you bells that can't be unrung after COVID-19. Engineer Rick, roll it. Super pumped to be here today. Just to introduce myself to everyone, my name is Dan Bolin. Brian, you can hit next. I'm a partner at Ansel Glink in Chicago. I'm a local government and land use attorney, and I represent various units of local government all across the state of Illinois. And I've experienced a wide range of COVID-19 responses in my practice. I've worked with elected officials that believe COVID-19 is a hoax, and I've worked with communities that have adopted mask requirements even before the state of Illinois did. About me, another thing about me, I was podcasting before everyone started a quarantine podcast. I talk about local government law on Ansel Glink's Quorum Forum podcast. Also, it's a podcast inspired by the Engaging Local Government Leaders GovLove podcast. I've been on there a few times too. Pleased to be representing folks from Engaging Local Government Leaders Network, ELGL, here today. They have an incredible suite of COVID-19 response resources, and we have a link to that included at the end of the presentation. So next, Brian. So while we're here today, we're here to, talking to folks in my law practice and folks at ELGL. We keep coming across these so-called bells that can't be unrung after COVID-19. These emergency practices that are changing expectations about how we'll do things in the future. I'll talk about as many of these bells as time allows today. Including local government meetings, work from home, liquor liquor control, right-of-way management, and online services. So next, Brian, how are we going to do that? We're going to kind of talk about the examples of how local governments are doing things before, during, and after COVID-19. And I think for each of these bells, you'll see that these emergency practices are creating new expectations for local government services in the future. In other words, there's no going back to the way that we did things before. And so these emergency practices are changing the way that we'll do things in the future. Hey, next, Brian. So the first thing I wanted to talk about is remote meeting attendance. Before COVID-19, I'm sure your open meetings law allowed remote attendance for members of a public body. Next, Brian. In Illinois, a public body would have to adopt rules allowing attendance by video or audio conference. And at a minimum, those rules would require a member to notify the clerk ahead of time, unless it's impractical. You needed a good statutory reason, like personal illness or disability, employment purposes or business of the public body, or a family or other emergency. A majority of the public body would also have to vote to allow the member to attend remotely. So some local governments adopted rules and allowed remote attendance, but many did not. Next, Brian. Before COVID-19, we also talked about attendance by members of the public. Before it was not required. It's not very common. The meetings are sometimes broadcast or recorded, but there wasn't a lot of real-time participation. Next, Brian. During COVID-19, the governor, as I'm sure in Illinois, as I'm sure you might have seen in many of your states, issued executive orders that encouraged local governments to postpone public business whenever possible, and it suspended the Open Meetings Act requirements for physical presence. In other words, you don't need to have a reason anymore for not being physically present at the meeting place. You still need rules. You still need to let the clerk know that you're going to attend remotely, and you still need majority approval to attend remotely. You wanted to depart from to take a minimum departure from your ordinary practices as possible. So did the governor have the authority to suspend the Open Meetings Act? Probably, but watchdog groups around the state disagreed and threatened litigation. Bond counsel, for instance, won't sign off on meetings without a physical quorum. And there's been increasing number of lawsuits challenging various aspects of the governor's executive orders. Nevertheless, we have local governments that had critical business to do during coronavirus response. And suddenly, after many years, they were finally interested in adopting remote attendance rules. Next, Brian. The governor's executive order encouraged local governments to allow remote attendance by members of the public, provide audio, video, or other telephonic access to ensure members of the public can monitor the meeting and update their websites and social media feeds to keep the public fully apprised of any modifications to their meeting schedules or the format of their meetings. While some local governments postponed and canceled meetings, as things wore on, there's increased adoption of these virtual meeting platforms, I'm sure you've experienced, to conduct public business. Next. Recently, there's been increased demand for remote attendance at public hearings. A lot of local governments were able to postpone their public hearings for land use matters in March and April. But as we move into May, in June possibly, in my practice anyway, we're experiencing increased demand to move forward on these land use applications. So here's a handy 10 list of 10 best practices for remote zoning hearings we've been sharing with our clients. Next. Number one, only hold necessary hearings. It's going to reduce your exposure to those kinds of due process challenges and other challenges that we mentioned, the governor's executive order. Objectors have been appearing at virtual public hearings and arguing that the Open Meetings Act requirements aren't being complied with because the governor didn't have the authority to suspend the executive order. How do you manage challenges? You put it on the record why you have to move forward. It's reasonable to ask the applicant to demonstrate why they can't wait and need to move forward on this application, and ask the applicant to sign an agreement to indemnify and hold the municipality harmless for moving forward with the public hearing. That's entirely reasonable to ask. Number two, adopt emergency rules. Municipalities have authority to, in Illinois anyway, to adopt public comment rules and rules to manage zoning hearings. Adopting emergency rules to explain how the hearing will depart from your usual practices is a good idea, and explain to everyone how the meeting is going to go. Number three, open and convenient hearing locations. The Open Meetings Act requires meetings to be open and convenient. What's open and convenient will depend on the conditions at the time of the hearing, and that can change between the time you publish notice and the time of the hearing. In addition to online attendance, consider what physical attendance you could offer in compliance with the current gathering limits. You could hold a meeting in a larger room. At one time, the Illinois General Assembly was thinking about getting together and having session at McCormick Place, a big convention center, spread all out. They still haven't met yet, though. You could consider broadcasting the meeting into multiple rooms. You could regulate physical access, so one in one out, or set up a staging room, different kinds of ways to manage open and convenient meeting access, especially important for a public hearing. Identify ways to participate. Provide multiple redundant, flexible ways for individuals to participate in hearings with whatever limited physical attendance you can allow, teleconference, video conference, social media. But keep in mind that some folks may not have internet access, so they may have disabilities requiring a reasonable accommodation, which is why it's important to provide multiple avenues of participation. And then advertise those methods of participation. Put them in your agendas, hearing notices, and your website, and social media feeds. Next. It's a good practice to get your public hearing materials, your packets, whatever application materials, out in advance of every public hearing. And it's essential for remote public hearings. And make sure that these documents have distinct page numbers or other identifiers that everyone can use to follow along during the hearing. Identify the speakers for the hearing, if possible, so you could grant access to the necessary technology, but don't strictly enforce pre-registration. Do your best to accommodate folks that don't pre-register. Having a hearing administrator, somebody like Brian to manage the tech, and somebody that's not an elected or appointed official, serve as the hearing administrator. Let the officials focus on the substance of the hearing. Let the administrator manage muting, screen sharing, and Zoom bombing. Having a good hearing outline, publishing an outline of the hearing in advance, review the outline at the top of the hearing too. A lot of folks, these public virtual meeting platforms for some people have reduced the barriers to entry to attend a public meeting. And so this might be their first public meeting,
and explaining to them, especially in this unusual setting, how it's going to go is super important to reassure them that they will have an opportunity to be heard. Finally, be flexible and err on the side of offering additional process, and don't be afraid to continue the application for further hearing due to technical difficulties. Remember to give everyone a fair opportunity to participate. Next. So we expect remote attendance is going to be part of the way we do things going forward. It should probably be in addition to and not instead of physically present meetings. There's a lot of energy around these new virtual meeting tools, but it's important to keep in mind that there's a reason that we've been meeting in person for a long time. Not everybody can use the virtual meeting tools, and they're not useful for everything. I imagine it's going to be at a land use hearing real difficult to cross-examine a witness virtually. So it'll be an important part of what we do. In Illinois, we'll need legislation to continue the suspension of the physical presence requirements for public body members, but there was never anything stopping us from offering remote attendance for the public in the past. And now that they're doing it, I think they're going to expect to be able to do so more in the future. Enough about meetings. Work from home is another one of those bells that is that we're going to talk about that can't be unrung. Before COVID-19, not a lot of my clients or employees worked from home. Tried to look up some numbers to help try to quantify this. Next. In 2017, 2018, the U.S. Bureau of Labor Statistics said that only 15.2% of local government workers could work at home, did work at home, and were paid for work at home. And then the International Public Management Association for Human Resources survey, they did a survey that said only 30% of respondents had a telework policy prior to the COVID-19 crisis. Next. Now that we're all working from home, since the courts are closed, there's my dog helping me out working from home. Her name's Nellie, and she's a good girl. So during COVID-19, March 20th, 2020 American and City County Magazine survey says 61% of local governments are allowing local government employees to work from home if possible. You have to imagine that number's probably higher as stay at home has expanded and as employers were able to further accommodate work from home. And so suddenly lots of our clients were finally asking us for work from home policies. So what makes for a good work from home policy? Next. Number one, equipment and materials. Make sure you clearly state what equipment and materials the employer will provide and what equipment and materials the employee is expected to have. Reimbursable expenses. Clearly define what the reimbursable expenses will be. Will the employer be reimbursing you for Wi-Fi, for your cell phone, your mortgage, or your favorite snacks? Illinois has a Wage Payment and Collection Act, and employers generally have to reimburse previously authorized and necessary expenditures. Employers are liable for substantial penalties under the act for unpaid amounts, interest on unpaid amounts of 2% per month, and payment of the employee's attorney's fees. So it's important to have a policy in place to set expectations about what's going to be reimbursed and to reduce liability under the act. Security, require compliance with the IT policies, and then set work expectations. I was talking to some of our labor and employment attorneys this morning about this. One of the biggest problems or challenges with work from home for people that haven't done it before, which there's a lot of them now, is setting important expectations about the work the employee is expected to complete, the hours that are supposed to be available and check in and communicate. But you don't want to be overly prescriptive about that. Clearly communicate expectations between the employer and employee alike. Workplace safety, next, Brian. In Illinois, employees who are working at home or anywhere remotely are still covered by the employee's workers' compensation insurance for injuries arising out of or in the course of employment. You want to make sure employees have a safe place to work at home, so no wires hanging everywhere or what have you. Accounting time, require close accounting of time worked remotely, especially for non-exempt workers. You want to do that to remind employees they're not entitled to work extra time, even if they are working at home. They need prior authorization first. And then employer needs. Finally, remember that working from home must still advance the employer's needs. You want to make sure that this work from home arrangement actually accomplishes your goals. So next, we expect that there's going to be increased demand for telework. There's change expectations for employers and employees alike. Employers who are reluctant to implement remote work arrangements may conclude it's not such a bad thing and incorporate it as part of their work culture on a more permanent basis. And employees will expect to be able to continue working from home more than they did in the past. Survey said 55% are planning to continue telework after local governments reopen. And 72% of employers say they will maintain an expanded telework program. So to do so, you need to adopt a work from home policy if you have not already, and then implement the policy in a way that fulfills the employer's goals. Next, liquor control. In Illinois, you need a state license and a local license to make retail liquor sales. Municipalities have broad authority to define classes of liquor licenses. Next. Common liquor license classifications are based on sales for consumption on the premises and off the premises. Before COVID-19, if you had an off-premise license, you can offer liquor sale deliveries and sales through your business, so long as your local jurisdiction allows the activity. You have safeguards in place to ensure that those accepting the product are over 21, and you can't accept payment or orders at the delivery location. Next. During COVID-19, the governor issued an executive order closing all the bars and restaurants for on-premises consumption, and the State Liquor Commission issued guidance to local liquor commissioners announcing it will accept the decision of a local liquor commissioner to allow on-premises only retailers to sell liquor off the licensed premises. In other words, local authorities can authorize an on-premise only retailer to make package or to-go sales off the licensed premises. Furthermore, under the state's guidance, local liquor commissioners can permit temporary deliveries of alcoholic liquors. So all retail licensees are temporarily allowed to make curbside deliveries, home residential deliveries, or they can be authorized, and any other sale or delivery intended to promote social distancing. So local liquor control commissioners may also authorize third-party delivery services. I finally found the chat, guys. I'm seeing folks are saying, sadly, not in Wisconsin. Sorry about that. But in Illinois, anyway, these deliveries they must be made in the original container. Pre-mixed cocktails normally intended for on-premises consumption are prohibited. The deliveries made to a residence will still require examination of the identification for over 21 from a safe social distance. Now, these These are temporary privileges, not generally allowed by law, but I had city managers contacting me and saying, I don't know, this is not, I don't know if this is such a good idea. Once you allow it, how do you go back? And I agree. How do you unring that bell? But you might find that it's not so bad after all. The reasons behind why the policy was this way might not be might not actually exist, and it might help these restaurants at least during this this temporary time when on-premise consumption is not available. The after COVID-19, there's obviously going to be change expectations about package sales and liquor delivery. Groups are organizing a push for to-go cocktails, but the Liquor Commission is still opposed. But they because they facilitate immediate consumption of spirits, that increases the likelihood of vehicle code violations, product contamination concerns, and local control concerns. But at least during COVID-19, anyway, there's been the sales of cocktail kits, which is a non-alcoholic mix, such as margaritas or Bloody Marys, and an alcoholic beverage in the sealed original manufacturer's container. Some people have been doing puzzles at home during COVID-19. I've been working on cocktail kits. So this is something that we may see more after COVID-19, at least I hope so. Next, right-of-way management. A couple quick, we'll breeze through these last couple. The public right-of-way is a fascinating place to be. There's so many different demands on the public right-of-way. And if you just look at the curb, Brian, next, you got all these things, parked vehicles, what have you. Next, there's some more. Emergency services, Uber, Lyft, next. And last but not least, local businesses. And so I called saw my buddy, TJ Blakeman's past president of the APA, Illinois Chapter, American Planning Association. And I talked to him about something that he was doing in Champaign. And next, Brian, the city had declared a local state of emergency in response to COVID-19 after the emergency order from the governor closing restaurants and bars. The city experienced decreased demand for parking and increased demand for pickup. So the city used its emergency powers to roll out curbside pickup lanes to support local bars and restaurants. They ended up with 12 or 13 zones for bars and restaurants without off-street parking. Next. So now the property owners are asking, will this continue after COVID-19? And reasonably so. There's going to be increased demand for pickup and delivery, maybe not what it was, but there could be more of it. Will there be one space on every block face for pickup? This is another temporary emergency practice that we expect to continue in the future. Now they're also talking about restaurants reopening. The city has 1,000 seats or restaurant seats located in the public right of way. How do you configure those in different plazas and in places while maintaining pedestrian ways? And so this is another challenge. And you've heard other communities, maybe larger communities, talking about closing streets for restaurants. I don't know if they'll do that in Champaign, the closing streets has rippling effects throughout the community, but it's something the communities are thinking about after COVID-19. So, and during reopening. So next, Brian, we're almost out of time, let's touch on this last one. This is kind of a simple one. An example that one of my clients did in offering online services in the city of North Chicago. Next. This seems so simple as utility billing. They offered mail, drive up, phone, Dropbox, auto pay, a bunch of different ways that you could pay your utility bills. Next. So, but early in their COVID-19 response, the city suspended water shutoffs because after all, you needed water to wash your hands for 20 seconds. And then they offered a one-time 2,000-gallon credit on water bills for residents who sign up for auto pay. Now, this was an existing service, but offering the incentive encouraged contactless payment. There's some percentage of people that wouldn't have signed up without the incentive, and it increased the rate of adoption and the rate of payments. Next. So customers, the expectation is that the local governments will offer more online services in the future. For a lot of my clients, online payment's still relatively new. That's something that customers and residents are going to increasingly expect to be able to complete transactions online or in contactless ways after COVID-19. Offering incentives like this in the future might be helpful. The enforcement costs for water collections can be high. I graduated law school in 2008, so I started out practicing law, recording a lot of water liens. And you can foreclose on these liens, but they're generally small and they're junior to prior existing liens like a mortgage, so they get paid last at a foreclosure sale. So offering auto pay incentives like this on the front end could help promote voluntary payment and help avoid enforcement costs. There'll be less work for me, but that I'm sure we got other things to do. So anyways, next, this is a really cool topic, and I'm super pumped that ELGL had me out to do it and share all these ideas with all you. I hope to talk to you all about it some more in the breakout section, get to some of these questions from the chat. Here's some of the resources that we talked about here today. The ELGL's got that COVID-19 crowdsource page. It's super helpful. And I've give a penny, take a penny in there, shared articles and that I've used some that I found there. It's a useful resource. And we talk more about those 10 tips for public hearings. You can read about them on our Municipal Minute blog, or we talk about them more in depth on recent Quorum Forum podcast. If you want that list of resources for work from home policies, there's a good article there on our Workplace Report blog. Next, Brian. Let's see. ICMA had a neat podcast about employment law in COVID-19 recently. It's where we got some of that survey data we talked about today. And ELGL has a useful, neat article, I thought, from Mike Skibby from Buffalo Grove talking about implementing distributed work, implementing your remote work policies. It's only useful if you implement the policy and not let it collect dust on a shelf, and some other resources there. So feel free to reach out and contact me if you got any questions.
Thanks, Dan. That was great. A lot of important lessons there for local governments. And glad you made friends with your new friend, Brian. And people like the picture of your dog, Nelly. We'll include that in the show notes, too. And also impressive that you managed to find the chat two-thirds of the way through the presentation. You'll get them next time, buddy. Anyways, so it is a special meeting. We have to have public comment. So while I was at a stoplight, I took a look at one of the questions that we get. Now that the state of Illinois is in phase three, does my agency need to train employees about how to return to work? Well, that is a best practice. The governor, as well as the CDC, the Illinois Department of Public Health, OSHA, a variety of other public agencies have issued guidelines for health and safety requirements in the workplace for various industries. Employers need to follow these guidelines, and in turn, employees need to know how the new guidelines will apply to their behavior. After all, when employees have been teleworking or on furlough or laid off for the last few months, or even if they have been going to a modified workplace, the workplace is going to be different than it was a few months ago. So that's the purpose of a return to the workplace policy. A number of new rules now exist in the old, from what was in the old workplace, from hygiene to social distancing requirements to notification requirements by employees. You can't effectively enforce the new rules unless your employees first know what they are. So having a policy and training your employees will help your agency manage this transition more successfully. Important to think about as we move through phase three in Illinois and possibly to phase four if we all keep following the rules. So Department of Public Works upcoming webinar from ILCMA on August 20th at 11:30 a.m. at Local Responses to Recreational Cannabis. Kimberly Richardson, the acting assistant city manager of the city of Evanston. Tim Denton, the chief of police, Village Wharf. Oh, and Dan Boland from Ansel Glink. If you want to hear more from him, tune in to this webinar on August 20th. Should be a good one. Before we go, I want to remind everyone to subscribe and leave us a review wherever podcasts are heard. We prefer good reviews. Email us your questions and show ideas, podcast@anselglink.com, and then leave us a voicemail at 312-604-9178. And as always, you can visit us online at quorumforum.anselglink.com. Can we get a motion to adjourn? Second, all in favor, the ayes have it. We'll see you next time on Ansel Glink's Quorum Forum Podcast.